Thank you. So today's community engagement meeting, August 3rd. My name is Richard, council co-chair and co-chair of the community engagement meeting. So we can do some introductions and welcomes. Once again, I'm Richard. Welcome. And I can pass it off to our David.
I'm going to assume me. So
yeah, sorry about that. Yeah.
Council member.
David Jordan.
David Jordan, council staff.
Laura.
Laura Thomas, council member.
Hi, Laura. Stephen.
Stephen Spano, the HCAP staff attorney at the AIDS Legal Referral Panel.
Hi, Stephen. Kira.
Kira, council staff.
Kira, Beth.
Beth Neary, HIV Health Services.
Bill.
Bill Hirsch, AIDS Legal Referral Panel and the HIV AIDS Provider Network.
Hi, Bill. And Mark.
Mark Wilmore, council staff.
Okay, welcome, everybody. So if we could, let's review and approve today's draft agenda. If we want to take a look at that. Is someone going to pop that up on the screen or?
Oh, I can pop it up. I'm sorry.
Take a look at this.
I would like to ask that we switch, I'd like to request that we switch items 6 and 7, since I'll only be here to shepherd the increased funding scenario agenda items, if that's okay with folks.
Everyone agree with that? Any objections by consensus? No? Okay, we'll do that. Mark, you'll be up after, well, pretty soon. Thank you. So we can approve today's agenda. No objections, fine. Let's take a look at last July 6th draft minutes, if we could. So, Derek Mapp, co-chair of that meeting. Everything looks okay. Everything cool? Thanks, everyone. Do we have any announcements?
Just a reminder that we are continuing virtually this month for all meetings.
Thank you, Mark. Any other announcements? How about public comment?
I'm so sorry. I do need to make one quick announcement that I have to take off after I provide my report. I have an appointment afterward.
All right. Thank you. Any public comments? Welcome, Lee. You want to announce yourself, Lee? Welcome.
Hi, guys. Sorry for the delay getting on. This is Lee Jewell, council member.
Lee, you have a double he, him, his. You're really
hi, Lee. And Laura will be leaving at 4. Thank you, Laura. Same with Beth. Okay, Beth, thanks for letting us everyone know. So there was no public comment. And we're going to go to Mark Moeller right now with the he's going to be doing the
increased funding scenario discussion. All right. I'm going to try to share screen. And if I fail, like I've been feeling a lot lately with screen sharing, I have sent this on to you, Kira and Dave, to help me out if that's the case. But let's just see. Oh, the host has disabled participant screen sharing. Okay. So you, Kira, you and I should probably go over Zoom stuff at some point. But it looks like you're going to have to share.
Yeah, I can do that.
These are easy fixes on the Zoom account. I'll just give you a call at some point.
Is it this all one?
Right. Yeah, that's one. So okay. Please rest your eyes in the middle so you can ignore that top section and look at HHS administrative updates. So you'll see here that this is the stunningly rare occurrence of this EMA getting an increase in funding. As we'll see here for the straightforward Ryan White Part A dollars, it's a 2.4% increase. of 354,167. You'll see how that's mapped out. And there's additionally an MAI increase of 4.25% of 751,641. So that's what you have to deal with. You can stop share, but please keep that handy in case folks want to go back to the actual amounts. So steering asked me to provide sort of like the three potential paths that you all can consider. And of course, this then becomes, as we do here in San Francisco, a traveling motion, and it will go throughout the different committees, going next to Council Affairs next Wednesday, membership next Thursday, and then steering the following Thursday. I'm not sure if at that point it'll go to August full council meeting or if we'll wait till the summit. I'll just get direction from the co-chairs on that. Probably August, get it over with, but that's not up to me. All right, so per steering's request, you all certainly have, in this very unusual situation, sort of three paths that you can choose from. The first path is to, based on what you might have heard from different presentations around community trends, you may choose to specifically focus on a discrete service category. So you can look, of course, across your prioritization list, which I can find if you need to be refreshed, and sort of, I guess, pick and choose, hopefully based on some kind of logic model though. The second path, and in the way the most complex and certainly, I mean, I'm not trying to slant it here, the most potentially burdensome on DPH is to create a new project, right, to use this money. That's certainly under your purview, but do keep in mind that probably should mean a more in-depth conversation with DPH about how this new project would look. And the third path is would be sort of a straightforward sort of equality-based path in which you just proportionally apply it across all service categories. We have certainly heard from our service provider continuum representatives, it happened that that is a preferred path if that's part of your what you'd like to use as a consideration. It also, my understanding from steering is that it also, that might be unusually the most simple and straightforward for HHS to actually do, since they'll be opening up the contracts anyway for some other reason. So again, this is your choice. These are the three sort of main paths. Discussion.
Could you go over those briefly once again, Mark, especially the one where you think it's easiest for DPH?
Sure. So then we'll start in reverse order. I'd say that my understanding is like the easiest for DPH and the path that I think would possibly feel the most equitable and to the service continuum would be that third item of like just split it up proportionally across all service categories. So that would of course satisfy, I'd say, external stakeholders while also being helpful towards DPH. Going again in a reverse order, the second then would be like to create a new project. Again, that's under your purview. You can do that, but that I would say would need to require a more extensive conversation with HHS because there's a lot involved with that. Like, you know, an RFP, all these different things would have to really be discussed. That's a big one if you choose to do that. And then the first is the idea of, based on what you might have noticed from different presentations or around local trends, you might choose to like pick and choose which service categories you actually want to go to. That's certainly not like the equitable way, but that it would be a way that you are connecting what you've heard in meetings to your funding decisions. So those are sort of the three broadest paths. Looks like Laura had her hand up.
Yeah, just, you know, to put this in context a little bit, for the last few years, when the city has provided cost of doing business increases to general fund funded programs, it's been one of our advocacy efforts that Happen has been leading the work on to also come up with funding to do cost of doing business increases for Orion White funded programs. And, you know, what happens is that like within an organization, some staff are funded on Ryan White contracts and some staff are funded on general fund. And if general fund is getting a, you know, an increase, a small increase, but the Ryan White ones aren't, then the organization has to figure out, like, can they actually give raises to both staff or how to balance it out? And so that's why, you know, and Mark addressed some of this. I think, you know, figuring out, but so Happn carried that request this year as well, but it did not make it into the budget. So where we are now is that the Ryan White funded programs will, as it currently stands, will not be getting any cost of doing business increase. And so both in terms of the sort of the equity of sharing this surprising, shocking, small increase across all programs and trying to maintain sort of equity between the general fund funded programs and the Ryan White funded programs. I think that what Mark's third option was of the, you know, sort of sharing it across the board to all of the contracts makes the most sense from a sort of how do we try to hold our system together as best we can. That's my thoughts on why I think it's important to spread this increase across all of the programs.
Thank you, Laura. Any other thoughts on this before we go into probably then public comment and then motion making? Beth, and then Richard, and then Laura, raise your hand again.
So I just feel like I should disclose it's not necessarily easier for the department, although we're supportive of it because we have to open all the contracts up, but just for long-term knowledge. Anytime we apply something across the board, we have multi-year contracts and everybody has to amend their budget and the contract analysts have to process them all. But we are supportive of that and all of the options on the table.
All right, Richard and then David.
Welcome to Thomas and Derek, first off. I had a question, what Laura was just talking about, and I've heard this before. I like the proportional across all service categories myself for all the reasons that have been stated, but is that the one that affects people's pay level? Like Laura was just talking about, that's not the one, right? Like they'd have to increase.
Potentially. So what Laura was describing is that, you know, all the different providers get multiple forms of funding, but I would say the majority of HIV service providers get funding from our concern, from general funds and from the funds that this council oversees, Ryan White. So there's always advocacy for cost of doing business increases, just basic small percentages increases to allow for certainly for raises and other associated kind of expenses that, as we all know, are increase every single year. And advocacy for these cost of doing business increases were successful for general funds. However, they were unsuccessful for Ryan White funds. And so that means right now, say, I'll use just, let's say, Agency A. They are getting Ryan White funds and have some staff under that funding stream, and they're getting some general funds, and they have staff under that funding stream. So now they have money to do stuff from general funds to give raises to those folks, but they don't have money to do the same for their workers who are getting Ryan White funds. What Laura was mentioning is that if we do a proportional increase across all service categories, that actually makes it more equitable as far as, okay, then now everyone gets to have it. And does that make sense, Richard?
Yeah, I just didn't want my choice to hurt anyone like you were talking about there in that scenario. So yeah, I like the proportional across. I like the proportional across all service categories. Thank you.
Sure thing.
David?
Yeah, my only question was if we were to choose a whole like pick and choose sort of like service category stuff, how long would that process take and what does that look like? Because that just seems like a lot more work than it should be.
I would expect that for due diligence, that anyone putting forward a motion would be able to supply a certain logic model as far as like why you are particularly choosing this service category and hopefully track it back to trends that you have learned about. So I would hope it would not be just simply a a like, I like this service category, I'm choosing it. You'd really right. have to defend it. And of course, if you were a service provider, you could, certainly couldn't choose your own service category.
Right. Yeah, and I think with the carry forward, sort of like what we had last week and everything in consideration, I think the equitable distribution across the board makes more sense now, since some of that carry forward is going to really specific projects that I think should be funded.
All right. Any more discussion before we go to public comment and then motion making? Any public comment? Bill.
Hi, folks. So I want to speak strongly in favor of doing an across-the-board increase. Hopefully, it won't make Beth's job too messy to implement. But as Laura was saying, there is great concerns as costs for service providers continue to go up and we receive flat funding for our services. And I'll just use Stephen Spano as an example. So ALRP has a contract to support the HIV Consumer Advocacy Project. That contract has remained essentially flat. I think we got one little increase when we were able to do a cost of doing business increase, but essentially that contract has remained flat, even as we've experienced increased costs for that program. ALRP tries to implement a 3% salary increase for staff each year. Well, we've done that, but that doesn't mean that the contract increases by that much. That means that more and more, we have to augment that contract with other funds that we raise as a nonprofit to support that work. And the reality is that the contract that we have to support Stephen's work no longer covers all of the cost of his time, much less any other cost that the agency experiences. So this is a really critical issue for service providers. And I think we have a rare opportunity here to use CARE dollars to support an increase for service providers. Thanks.
Thank you, Bill. All right, so now is the time for the making of motions. We've heard some opinions and thoughts from a few folks, as well as some questions. Who would like to make a motion regarding increased funding?
I would. I'd like to put, finish what you're saying.
I'd finish. What is your motion, Lee?
It'd be for the proportional increase.
All right, so the motion that Lee is proposing is a proportional increase across all service categories. Is there a second to this motion?
Second.
Derek has seconded. Any discussion of the motion on the floor? All right, last chance for public comment. All right, this does involve funding, so of course this is a roll call vote. I'll start with the mover, Lee Jewell.
Yes.
Derek Mapp.
Yes.
Richard Sullivan.
Yes.
David Gonzalez.
Yes.
Laura Thomas.
Yes.
Thomas Noble.
Abstain.
All right, the motion carries and now will be figuratively carried to the next committee meeting for deliberation. Thank you all. Have a good afternoon. Bye.
Thank you, Mark. Okay, so now we'll kick off with our Stephen with the HCAP report.
Thank you. Let's see. This month there's actually been a lot of carryover from the previous month. I have to apologize. I think I did actually close out a couple of cases yesterday, and I'm not sure why they didn't make this to the report, but I do want to make sure that it makes it into discussion today because I do think that it's important, and then it'll appear on the report next month. I just don't want to anybody to be blindsided and see, hey, why is there a closed case? But there was a closed case with regard to a client who was receiving psychosocial support. The client reports that a case manager at the service providers organization misrepresented themselves as a therapist and or a mental health professional, and then acted as that, and then induced the client to Can they kind of involve themselves in the client's personal relationship and induce the client to relocate to a different state? Client did relocate to a different state. These are all the client's reports. They're pretty egregious. We did file a grievance on the client's behalf. The grievance was heard. The service provider was receptive, and we were informed that the service provider had terminated the employment for that person. So that's not to speak to, you know, the veracity of it, but the reason that I wanted to make sure I brought it up is because I do have some urgent concerns about the client's mental health state. This was a very traumatic incident for them, and actually, given their history, it was a re-traumatic incident. And I have had, the client is monolingual speaking, Spanish speaking, and he has had some real challenges obtaining mental health support. And so I've enlisted the help of the service provider to help, you know, find some immediate services for this client, somebody that he can talk to about this experience and kind of work through. Right now, the client's in a place where they're like, I'm just going to seek asylum in a different country because I don't feel safe here. But that's going to be a long time coming. I say this not to highlight, you know, the unfortunate part about this, you know, which is that somebody slipped through the system and misrepresented themselves and really did some serious harm. But that when that happens, there is no safety net to support folks who are harmed. And you know, our efforts to try and get mental health support have fallen flat on their face yet once again. I think they are well known to this committee and to the basically the entire community, the few service providers that are around who have mental health services to provide have right now, by their report, 5 month long wait lists. There's another, you know, I think the public, I guess I think I can say it, but because I don't think it's HHS, but the 1DPH, you know, the Behavioral Health Access Network, I know that their intake process moves through several weeks before you even get connected with a provider, and the qualifications are much less robust than they are for our HIV positive clients through HHS funded services. So you know, I just, you all will know me by now that I'll take any opportunity to advocate for support for somebody in a situation like this, and just take any moment I can to highlight the necessary need for mental health services. In a broad sweep, we're still working through some of the relocations from the RCFCIs. There's not really a clear plan yet, but I think there are some good supports on the horizon. The two main needs still continue to be housing navigation support, as well as in-home supportive services for folks after they relocate, if they relocate to independent housing. The last thing we want to do is move somebody from a facility where they're receiving a high level of care into their own unit or their own apartment and not have them have adequate support to succeed. So this is really, my efforts here have been trying to communicate to the system how we need to set people up for success in this regard, rather than roll the dice and hope that they don't become, you know, regular users of emergency services, because that's going to be a much larger drain on the system than keeping them where they're at. And with that, I'll just open it up for questions or comments on particular cases.
Hey, Stephen, anyone have anything for Stephen?
Is the person you mentioned at the beginning, they're still not connected to mental health services?
No, still not connected to mental health services.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And they are here in San Francisco?
Yes.
Okay. We might reach out in case we have any ideas.
Yeah. I mean, anything I can do to support. Yeah, the referrals thus far, I know, are going to be, you know, and this is something that I think we all need to be cognizant of, is like handing somebody a referral doesn't solve their problem all of the time. It sometimes it creates a bigger problem for them to, because, you know, and I've been in this situation as a consumer where someone, you know, refers you to a place and then you hit a brick wall with them and you're like, well, why did I even bother calling? And then, you know, and at that point you've done some intake paperwork at a different place and then you go somewhere else to try and help. And they say, well, are you seeing anybody? You're like, not really, but maybe, I don't know. You know, I mean, it can cause a lot of confusion for consumers, I think.
I mean, it also seems like the actions of this manager potentially rise to sort of criminal activity. I mean, I totally out of my depth there. And there are resources for people who've been a victim of a crime in ways that aren't otherwise. I don't know. I'm just sort of shocked by this whole thing. As I can tell you are too. And just sort of wondering if there are any criminal legal system sort of recourse.
Yeah. So there's two points to make there. The first is, you know, it's not within HCAP's purview to sue an organization for, right? That's not what I'm here for. I'm always trying to keep the client linked to care rather than create, you know, rather than engage in the adversarial process. I can refer to legal services, right, in a situation like this, but in this instance, the client is an immigrant, they're actually a lawyer in their country of origin. And they, you know, what they communicated was they know, and they're monolingual, you know, and so what they communicated was like, you know, their experience with the justice system is not one that's going to support them in this effort. And frankly, I don't blame them.
Fair.
You know, yeah. And so, you know, my goal is to try and, as it always is to try and find some wraparound support for this person in what I agree is a very unfortunate, you know, circumstance. Yeah, it's a heartbreaking one.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen.
Yeah, for sure. If there's nothing else, I do have to take off. I have a doctor's appointment that I have to hit.
See you next time. Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you.
Okay, looks like we're ready for needs assessment and COLA updates.
Richard, just before we move off that, I don't know how other folks are feeling, but like, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do here. Right, other than hear that kind of happened. And then I'm like, is anybody else having that similar feeling or?
Right, well, we can't really do anything. I mean, the reports are basically designed to give us a kind of the landscape of what's going on with clients because, you know, it's the contract is funded through us. You know, we don't talk about specific providers as well. We don't do that at all, including here. It's especially frustrating when we run across a situation like this, when our system doesn't have the ability to meet the need of a client, right? So, I mean, and there's various reasons, and we all know partly why that is. But again, we're just receiving an update on what's going on generally with clients to see if there's anywhere that we might possibly want to prioritize or allocate funding in a direction where, you know, client trends from this report are going. That's all.
So if I can also add to that, another big piece of the council's responsibility is to review standards of care. And so I think a lot of what we hear from HCAP both goes towards prioritization and funding, but it also goes towards when you review periodically. It hasn't happened in a minute, but when standards of care are reviewed, all of this sort of ongoing sort of iterative process of seeing what's happening with HCAP should help inform what that looks like for you. And if there are things that are missing, pieces that you hadn't considered, you know, very sort of unexpected circumstance like we just heard about, that are sort of, you know, anomalous, but also maybe something worth thinking about when it's time to sort of do that review. So that is also a part of the process.
Well, one more thing is in HIV Health Services, we're in a slightly different spot. So as part of the council, we're not allowed to know what agencies, but as part of HIV Health Services who contracts with HCAP, we are allowed to know who the agencies are, and we get a special report in the background with the agency names. So we can follow up with Stephen to find out who that is. And if it is a contractual thing, we can potentially follow up in some sort of way. So we, I'm sure, will in this case. I'm still digesting because I'm a little shocked by it, to be honest. But yeah, we'll see what we're able to do. But we can't report on the specific agencies back. So we don't usually, we do some of those activities as well. We don't often talk about them, though.
Just to be clear, could someone run that by me again? A case manager did what?
It sounded like a case manager represented themselves as a therapist when they were not. That's what it sounded like to me, and had a lot of influence on the client that they may or may not have had if they were just a case manager to the client. That's what I heard. I don't know if that's exactly what happened. And Stephen did say that was self-report of the client. So that's what I took away. Did anybody else get different things?
So that's an ethical and professional violation.
Yeah, I'm kind of tripping on it into, because like for a therapist, that would be an absolutely clear license violation, but they're not a therapist, they're a case manager. So I'm still thinking it through.
Yeah, and like Beth said, it's important that Stephen and Beth have a conversation about this to figure out exactly what's going on. The client's monolingual, so it just needs more investigation.
Great, thank you all for that. I just started to derail. I was just like, I'm kind of in that same like, really? So I do have a lot more questions than answers with regards to it. And again, I was like, am I supposed to do something here? That was my other thought. So just, but it's more for FYI at this particular point. So thank you all.
Yeah, I think David's point is a real good one. We have changed standards of care when we've seen certain trends that have happened and would improve service. So yeah, I'm not sure this would fall into that category, but it's definitely worth noting.
It would be interesting to get at least a general follow-up on how this guy is doing or how the process is happening, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that should be in the next month's report, I'm sure, because the reports continue cases until they're closed, basically.
Okay, thank you, everyone. Thank you, Beth. Thank you, Thomas. So yeah, Kira or David and David, needs assessment and COLAs?
Go ahead, Kira. Kira, go ahead and take the lead on this since
okay. Hi, everyone. So as far as the COLA, I know David provided an update about that last time, which is just that our focus group was completed and we've gathered all the data. So now it's just about organizing and kind of putting it into categories to be able to report that back to you. And then as far as the needs assessment, right now we are still working on outreach and we're working on gathering the survey to be able to send that out once we have a nice list of clients. So mostly it's outreach right now. Yeah, is there anything else you wanted to add, David?
Our Our next COLA is meant to focus on SF. Why am I blanking on the navigation center? We have sort of unofficially been given a little bit of word that maybe people are not super comfortable with that, or maybe there might be some challenges around whether we want to be focusing on that. We are still sort of trying to suss that out. This isn't the thing that we've sort of given up on. It's just, you know, we've been given some real like gentle, unofficial kind of like, maybe this might be more challenging than you think kind of thing, but it's not the first time that's happened. So we're going to continue to sort of look at it, but we will update you as necessary. So the other thing around needs assessment is we've had, as is often the case, a little bit of difficulty getting some provider cooperation. I think this probably falls more on Beth than any of you, but if we can sort of touch base at some point, maybe I can send an email and copy Kira on it around this, but we could use a little bit of help with maybe an introductory email from HHS, because sometimes that is helpful in getting collaborating partners to actually respond to us. We know that they all have heavy caseloads and we are not always going to be their priority, but and without being able to like physically walk into somebody's office, it is challenging, especially if we don't have like personal relationships with these folks already. So we'll check in with you about that later, but ideally we'll begin interviews soon. I think our ducks are all in a row with everything else aside from getting some help around recruitment. I mean, we can move forward with some folks that we already have contact with, but there are other folks, fairly big programs that we haven't heard back from. So we'll touch base with you about that offline. That's all I have.
Okay, thank you, Kira and Dave, for those updates. Wow, that looks like we've run out of space on the agenda. Is that it? Yeah. So if there's nothing else,
there's always space on the agenda, Richard.
Huh?
There's always space on the agenda.
Well, that's what I mean. There's unless someone wants to bring something up, there's nothing left. Next line I see is next meeting date and agenda items. So that says September 5th. Mark made the announcement that all meetings are still, council meetings are online for the ongoing future. And that's it for today.
Really quickly, Richard, not to give you, not to criticize your facilitation style, I will warn you about asking for additional sort of like things. Things have to be agendized in advance for us to talk about them. So the only thing we could potentially talk about in this remaining time is what we would like to agendize for next meeting. If there's something that people have a sort of burning desire to discuss, we can discuss that. But anything else, we could not really have a conversation about. So just a quick piece of guidance that goes to sort of everyone, just so we know why we do that.
Thank you. This meeting is officially over.
Thank you. Sorry,
bye, y'all.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.
Thanks.
Ciao, ciao.